Welcome back, chumps, to another installment of the Fantasy Chumps podcast. This is episode 79 of the series, and it's a pretty entertaining one at that. Excuse our intro to the episode as we kind of jump in the middle of a very natural conversation that was being held as we started recording. As Leighton, John, and I are trying to unpack some of the big mysteries and conspiracies around big optometry. So I hope you enjoy that. It was pretty fun for us to talk about. But after that, we get right into it, covering some rules and principles for drafting. I think you'll find a few of these strategies applicable to your upcoming redraft and dynasty drafts. So there's some good content there. But as always, follow us on Instagram at @fantasy_chumps, and please check out our new Twitter or X, however you want to dice it up. You can follow us at @fantasy_chumps there as well. Please interact with any of our tweets. We've been sending some stuff out, polls, you know, recommendations and whatnot. So it's a good follow if you're interested in that. But otherwise, enjoy the episode.
Do you wear glasses?
Usually I don't, but my room is really dark and my screen is really bright.
Are they blue light?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I was like, dude, you do not wear contacts.
No. Apparently, I have 20/15 vision.
I don't know. That was a thing.
Or maybe it's 2010. I can't remember.
Well, I don't know what.
That's really good.
Okay, let's see. Because I have apparently like 25/20.
But you have to wear glasses? Or with glasses?
No, these are just blue light.
Oh. Wait, so 2020
is like 25/20. Because like 2020 is like perfect.
Yeah. So one of your eyes is you probably have 20. I don't know how they put it. I don't know if like the first 20 corresponds to a specific eye and the second number corresponds to a different eye.
Okay, so but, like, 2020.
My younger sister had like 20, like 200 vision. She was like literally like legally blind in one eye.
This is Cecilia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then she had to like, she like trained her eye to be better, I guess. Like she had to
hit the gym.
Yeah. She was doing it blinks. She had to rep out 200 blinks. So you know, she actually had to wear like an eye patch for a while.
An eye patch?
Yeah, to like force her one eye to like be stronger. I mean, she would wear it at home, and she was also like 7. Dude, I honestly, that just unlocked like a whole like moment of my life. Dude, she hated the eye patch so much that we had to come up with a reward system for her. And wow. So for like every hour that she wore the eye patch, she got like literal like raffle tickets. And like if she got 10 raffle tickets, she could like get something. And that was how we baited my younger sister into correcting her blind ass.
Can we start the podcast with that story?
Yeah, we already started recording. Let's
keep it rolling.
Okay, yeah. Hang on. 20/20 vision is referred to as the standard of how a normal person sees. That means when you stand 20 feet away from an eye chart, you see what a normal person sees.
So 20/20 is the average?
That's what this website says. Commonwealthy eyes.
Average sounds a lot different than perfect. I always thought 20/20 was perfect vision.
That's what I thought.
Have I been lied to this entire time?
The whole system is a lie.
What? What is going on with big optometry? What lies have they been feeding us?
It's all the insurance companies, man.
Truly.
What?
What is up, chumps? We have got some action in the Skype call tonight. That was an electric start to the episode. I don't think I've ever experienced something like that. happy to be joining you on this lovely Wednesday evening. We've had really good weather in Missouri. Nate, I don't know if up in KC that you've had it or not, but in Springfield, it has been 80 degrees and sunny, nice little breeze. Like, fall is in the air. Like, I can smell the pumpkin spice coming all the way over from Starbucks. How's Dallas been, Layton?
It was 97 degrees today, and it was cool.
Well, yeah, so it was kind of cool for you guys. Got
that's
a nice little
horrible.
Break.
That's
it's better than 100.
I was in the office all day looking at Excel.
I mean, I was in the office most of the day. I got a little bit of a break, but
I was on the pickleball court today.
Were you really?
Yeah, we took a little company outing to Serve, which is like a pickleball complex.
John, I think they've
got them like kind of across the country. I think the first one was like in Scottsdale or something, but they are sweet. If we're ever like in town in Kansas City for like a Sunday Chiefs game, it would be so fun to go over there on like a college football Saturday and just
oh.
John, did I not tell you? Nate is either working like 12 hours a day, or he's just like doing a dynasty draft at work, or playing golf or pickleball.
You have made this very clear previously. Didn't know it was to that effect, but pickleball in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, it's not a bad afternoon.
It was pretty nice. It was a scorcher as well. We probably should have booked a court for inside. We've been having great weather up here as well. So we went with the outdoor court, but still very nice, probably like low 80s. But I don't know if you guys can see me on the Zoom, but I'm a little sunburned right now.
A little toasty.
I'm a little toasty.
Well, good thing I'm a vampire, you like evaporate, right?
Ooh. Oh, what a transition.
It was a smooth transition there. So if any of you all are not familiar, there is such thing called a Vampire Fantasy Football League. If you've listened to us last season, Nate, you participated in a Vampire League for the first time last year. Yeah,
that is correct. Yeah, that was my first time doing it and had a ton of fun with it.
Did it suck?
Yes, it did.
Nice.
It was tough, but it's a lot of fun. And so I'm excited that we're going to be doing one. And I honestly really like that it's like a 12 team as well. I think that's going to make it really competitive.
Yeah, it must suck for whoever has the 11th pick.
Hey, you've got some heat at the turn. I just need like a – what kind of stack are you thinking right now? Like in a perfect world, who are you getting at 11, 12?
Bijan.
Well, that's not going to happen.
If he's still there at 9, world.
If he's still there at 9, he is off the board. In a – perfect but normal world,
like Nick Chubb.
Hey, that's a great first pick. Nick Chubb's gonna be a beast this year. All right, whatever. Yeah, you're not motivated. I don't care about
you
anymore.
I
went there. Respect the Vampire League. It's brand new as of today.
Not disrespecting it. I'm just disrespecting how poorly my deck performed.
So that's also a good tidbit to determine draft order and who the vampire was. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. There is a website. I don't know if you Google Duck Race, it will probably be the first thing that pops up. It is electric. And you can go, I'm just going to type it in right now and see how far you can go. I think you can go up to 99 hours. And it's a blast. So highly, highly would recommend that to determine your draft orders if you have not done so to this point. Yep, you can go.
Cool.
You can go to 99 hours. That's incredible. It's the best thing I've seen all day. That is also another great thing. So Vampire League, new to the chumps this season. 12-team format, like Nate said. Right now, this is kind of the questions that I have for Nate and Layton. Currently, we have two flex spots. in the starting lineup from the little bit of reading. And that's what Sleeper produces, standard format. I didn't change that. That's just what it creates for the league. My question to you, I'm not going to tell you what that I've read. How many bench spots and how many flex spots should we have in this league? Since it's 12 team, if you roughly think that you're going to have like 5 running backs, 6 wide receivers, a backup tight end, a backup quarterback, and then another piece somewhere in the middle, like you're looking at 16 or 17 players per roster, but that doesn't necessarily follow ADP. My question to you guys is, how do we balance this so that it's not just totally unfair for the vampire?
Well, I mean, it is Chase, so we can make it unfair, right?
We could.
I don't know. Honestly, it does. I mean, with the Vampire League, I think just like inherently it sounds like it's going to be very unfair for the vampire. But once you get like 3 weeks into the NFL season and there's some attrition going on and, you know, starters are going down, I mean, there is a ton of value on the waiver wire. And I mean, that's just what the vampire, they're the only ones right. that can access the waiver wire. So they, while they're probably going to struggle through week 1 and 2, like once week 3 hits, they're going to have like a pretty solid roster. And yep. if you were one of the teams that suffered like an injury, hopefully you have depth to, you know, fill that spot. But I would give it like 3 weeks before the vampire is like kind of a contender and competitive. And once they get one win and can add a star player to their roster, like it gets crazy after that. So I think especially because when I did it last year, it was a 10-team league. So teams were already a lot more stacked than they will be for a 12-person league.
So that also means the Vampire was more stacked, though, also.
Yes, there were better options to fill their week 1 starting lineup off the waivers.
Right.
That is a good point. So
I think I failed to explain what the Vampire League is. So I'll run through it briefly. I got too excited. 12 team league, 11 teams draft a full roster. The 12th player doesn't get to select anybody. Once the draft is completed, you can't make roster moves as far as adding or dropping players from your roster from the waiver wire. So who you draft is who that you're set with. You can make trades, but the Vampire is a co-commissioner. So he can veto trades if he feels like, A, it's going to benefit somebody that he still has to play, or B, he thinks somebody's getting way too good of a deal and it's possibly going to, you know, present a threat to them down the road. We're tossing around the idea of putting a cap on the number of trades that the vampire can veto. The other side of that coin is that the week you play the vampire, you're not allowed to make trades to prevent people from just making crazy trades to make the vampire burn his vetoes. Kind of a weird rule, but I think those two have to go hand in hand with each other. If the vampire beats you, a player from your starting lineup, he can steal and swaps them for the same position from his starting lineup. So if he beats you, Bijan Robinson is your RB1. He can swap Bijan Robinson for like Tank Bigsby or somebody who is in his flex position.
Why are you hating on Tank?
I'm not hating on Tank. It's just the two are massively on different ends of the top 300. So that's a sleeper. That's a vampire in a nutshell. I've also seen a little bit that I've read. It is on Sleeper. A little bit that I've read about it. And Nate, I was going to ask you about this. Was the vampire able to select their schedule, or was it randomized?
No, it was randomized.
So that's one thing I've read for a 12-team league versus a 10-team league and an equalizer is that the vampire actually picks their schedule post-draft. So I don't know. It seems so like a huge advantage.
They would be trying to line up with bye weeks.
Correct. They would be vouching for position, you know, when Justin Jefferson is on bye week. I don't know what week it is, but let's say it's week six. He would want to play the presumably the number one team. I can't remember who has the number one pick. Benton, I think. He would presumably want to play Benton, Chase Wood, whenever Justin Jefferson was on a bye week.
Week 13.
There you go. So, very interesting. So back to the flex conversation and the bench spot conversation. How many do you guys feel is the sweet spot?
So are we locked in on two flex? I know that's
standard for sleeper. That's just standard for sleeper. From what I've read, that is not what's recommended for a 12-team league.
Yeah. No. And I would probably tend to think that one flex would be better. I think a two flex would probably, I think as the season goes on, I would think a two flex would probably benefit the Vampire more because they could plug in more, you know, high ceiling players and hope like one of them pops off.
Yeah.
But as far as bench goes, and did we agree that we were keeping defense and kicker, or are we going to do away with it?
It's still up in the air. I think that benefits the Vampire as well, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get rid of defense.
I think we should keep the defense and kicker.
I think, if anything, get rid of kicker, because a kicker is just kind of like, other than high scoring teams, but still that's like touchdowns and that's just a single point. So I think a kicker is actually more like it throws things off one way or the other. Like your kicker could have 20 points or his could have 20 points, where defenses are much more easily predictable.
I would personally like to keep defense and kicker because I think it adds some strategy to drafting. I mean, if you have a kicker, roster spot available, I mean, some people may elect to take a second kicker so they can, I mean, I would say on average, what does a kicker get every week? Like 7 or 8 points?
I'd say 6 to 7.
Yeah. If you were to grab a second kicker, you're guaranteed to get probably 6 points in the week that your kicker has a bye, which is stupid, but if it turns out that you're playing the Vamp on a week where your kicker has a bot, I mean, just having an empty roster spot it's not helping you at all. And that could hurt you if a Vampire is a kicker.
So I'll pose this question as well. If we can kind of weigh which side these decisions benefits, if it's the 11 or if it's the Vampire. So if the Vampire is selecting, so if Chase wants to select his own schedule, do you think we move to a deeper bench, or do you think we do something different with the starting lineup? Like,
I think bench would give the 11 more of an advantage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Than either slotting a defense or a kicker. Do you think otherwise?
I don't know. It's so hard to, like, you have obviously the most experience because you've played and, like, you've seen how these things work out. What would, looking back on, because you got, you did well in the Vampire.
I actually won it last year.
Okay, yeah.
Beat the Vampire in the championship.
Was it close?
Yeah, it was close. I mean, the championship was, I think I had a good week and maybe they didn't, but. It was very close. And the Vamp was running through people in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And just got lucky. I don't know if it was a bye or bad performances or what, but
yeah.
I think having a deeper bench would benefit the 11 a lot more. I think just because injuries are going to start piling up if you do lose to a Vamp. And what we did last year was the Vamp didn't have to send anybody back. So if the Vampire won,
you lose
a player. Yeah, you didn't get some waiver to plug into the spot. But so you were completely out a player. So if you had injuries piling up on your bench and you were to lose, you're just out.
So last question, and then we'll move on from this. But did you draft handcuffs? So like let's say, I think probably the most predictable. Well. I don't know. It's hard to say. But like let's say Christian McCaffrey's most predictable handcuff would be Elijah Mitchell, mm-hmm. which I feel like is an agreeable statement. If you draft Christian McCaffrey this year, are you drafting Elijah Mitchell?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you drafting somebody with like a higher ceiling that potentially slots in to replace a different injury that you have on your team?
Yeah, I think that's what I would do. I think I wouldn't plan. Christian McCaffrey is a tough example because he is super injury prone.
Right.
So like that does seem like a pretty reasonable move to make.
That just turns back to how many bench spots that you have, I guess.
Right. I will say I did do a handcuff last year. I did it with I took DeAndre Swift, I think, with my second pick, and I grabbed Jamal Williams as well.
So that worked out huge for you.
Yeah, it honestly saved my season. Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a bad strategy. We could go into like a whole vamp draft strategy segment at some episode in the future if we wanted to, because it is very different than your typical redraft.
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
But I messed up last year and I got so we were doing our main office redraft league at the same time we were doing our vamp redraft.
Oh, no.
Or our vamp draft. So there were two drafts going on simultaneously. And I got so caught up in just the redraft and like building a stacked team that in the vamp, I didn't take a second quarterback. And so in my first quarterback was Russell Wilson also.
You still won.
Yeah. So wow. That was super lucky. But I don't know if Russ missed any games last year.
I don't think he did.
But there was a week when he was on bye and I just couldn't play a quarterback.
Hmm.
And we also couldn't trade within the league either at all. So there were no trades at all. Like once you had your team, if you were part of the 11, if you were a non-vamp, you were stuck with that team the whole
time. That was just a thing to keep people more interested. That's what I read, was that it's just a way so that people don't kind of just like set it and forget it and, you know, whatever happens, happens. But okay, that's really cool. I personally really enjoyed that. Hopefully you guys. Yeah. okay, moving on to the episode this week. We're talking about draft strategies today. It's something that we feel is super important. Obviously, it is to have a plan going into your fantasy football drafts. Mock drafts are super helpful. It's obviously a tip that we definitely recommend, but also incorporating some sort of a strategy or maybe rules or principles that you try to follow whenever, you know, I don't know. Who's a player in like the top 20 that you guys really don't feel like should be there, but like he might fall outside of that range? Like
Jonathan Taylor.
Jonathan Taylor. Let's say that he falls all the way to the middle of the third round and you really weren't expecting him to be there, and this whole situation hasn't cleared up with him and the Colts. You need to have principles and set boundaries in place so that you're prepared for whenever that happens. So that's a worst case example. But yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. So I'll just go ahead and get us started. I'll keep rolling. My first rule that I try to follow, and it doesn't always work out perfectly. Like you have to be able to pivot. The first rule that I try to follow when that we're in the draft setting is draft what you know early. And what that I mean by that is there are certain guys that in the first and second round, we have a pretty good understanding of what their role is going to be in the offense. Nick Chubb, we're pretty certain on what that he's going to be for the Browns. He's been that bell cow running back for a long time. In fact, he's got Kareem Hunt out of the backfield, so he doesn't have to battle that timeshare, if you even want to call it that anymore. He still gets a ton of work, but now he's set up for even more work than what he had last year. Just feels like a huge opportunity to have a solid first round or second round pick if you're at the turn, and it gets your team set up for just success, really the opposite of failure, where you could draft a Derrick Henry who's going into age 29 season that is kind of uncharted territory for a workhorse running back. We don't really know if Derrick Henry is going to be able to hold up, because traditionally running backs who are 29 don't hold up under that age. So it's just one of those things where I like to personally go with what you know early, meaning in the first three rounds, I'm looking for guys that I think are the most solidified among all of the other draftable players in that area.
I'm putting John down for Patrick Mahomes in the first round.
Thank you. Yeah, just go ahead and pencil that one in, Patty.
Pencil in. So, Nate, you want to go next?
No, you got it.
All right. So this is one that I like a lot. I'll skip to number C because it's the most important. The contract year is undefeated. Basically, what I mean was this was a rule invented by Therese Paylor, rest in peace. Not necessarily that it was for fantasy purposes, but players, when they're on the last year of the rookie deal and they're up for a contract, they always seem to play a little bit better. So I went into that for fantasy football. I said that last year, didn't draft enough of those guys because, I mean, I would say it kind of worked out. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster had a good year. Obviously, where are the running backs that were up? Clearly not prepared for this. But it was just really interesting to see because, like, Miles Sanders had his best year ever. Jamal Williams, we saw, did really well. Dalvin Cook had a really great year. And so did Rashad Penny, you know, kind of a sneaky one, but Rashad Penny played really well. So it's just very interesting to see how players will do compared to that. So I always look forward to that, just kind of glance over it. If I'm between guys, it'll be a tiebreaker. You know, I'm not going to reach four rounds because Derrick Henry's on his contract year, right? That's kind of dumb. But, you know, it's just something to look forward to, and it's something I try to utilize a lot that I think the average fantasy football player in most leagues will probably not even think about. So, you know, everybody works harder for money, so that's what I always try to do.
It definitely is a good tip. It's a tried and true method at this point. I mean, what do you think the hit rate is on the contract year?
That's 100%. What do you mean?
100%? 60% of the time, every time.
If somebody doesn't get hurt, I feel like it's – and not necessarily that they'll be like league-winning players, but they do better than they're supposed to, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and that's – at the end of the day
– that's all you're looking for.
You're looking for players who are going to outperform where that you're drafting them.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, the wide receivers weren't really that great last year, but like I mentioned, a lot of those running backs are doing well. And this year – not going to lie, it's pretty stacked for free agents next year. So I'm really excited. I mean, top of the list, Kirk Cousins contract year. Let's go. Quarterback series, it's all there. But yeah, like I mentioned, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, Saquon, Dalvin Cook, Austin Eckler, all in contract years. So is Clyde Edwards-Helaire, so don't apply that to him.
Contract year. Stamp. No. CEH.
That's my first tip. Or principle, I should say. It's not really a tip.
I think both of those are excellent. And so I was talking to Layden about this last night, actually, on Xbox. But I have taken a slight step back this year and have done a little less draft preparation and have not focused as much on, like, a draft strategy. I think it could be because I've been playing in fantasy football for so long. And when you're doing a podcast, you're kind of tapped into fantasy all year long. So,
Sweeney, do you do a podcast?
Big podcast guy?
Yeah. I doubt it. So, yeah, if you're tapped into it kind of like we are, you've kind of got a pretty good beat on players as the season goes along. So when you see a draft board, you're not really surprised by anything as far as ADPs go and whatnot. But So I just had a couple points. One of them was related to drafting. One was for preparation, kind of, but also plays into drafting. But my first one had to do with seeking out positional advantages when you're drafting. And all I was going to say was pick your spots on when you're going to go for a positional advantage swing. I mean, I think sometimes we've all probably fallen victim to this before. When you're drafting, you draft a lot of, you know, high floor guys that are like pretty safe picks. You're trying to get the value everywhere you can. And you kind of fall into a trap of mediocrity in your lineup, and you have a lot of solid dudes, but you don't have a positional advantage over, you know, half your league at any position.
You're the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah. Mm. So
you make the playoffs and lose.
Right. So I was just thinking, pick your spots on a position that you want to have, you know, a top 2, 3, 4 guy, or if it's running backs or wide receivers, you know, get two guys that are, you know, top 16, top 15 for the position, and have that positional advantage. So I think there's multiple draft strategies you can go about as far as like drafting a quarterback, for example. We know quarterbacks are pretty deep. But if you're going to want to have a quarterback, you know, advantage, try and get one of those top 3 guys or whatever. And you're going to have to make up the difference elsewhere, drafting, you know, deep wide receivers and whatnot, if you want to be very unique and have the tight end positional advantage, get Travis Kelce. Like, spend on that pick, and you're not really going to regret it, because
right.
you are going to beat everyone in your league at that position over the course of a season. So I think be sure, like, you come out of the draft having a very good group of players at a position, and at least one. If you're able to get two where you feel like you're top 3 in your league at that position, that's like fantastic. And then
Nate taking Kelce 101.
So for a second, I haven't followed his contract. He was under contract, but I wasn't sure for how long. I was really hoping that Kelce just hammered all 3 of our first pieces of advice on draft somebody who you know what they are in the roster or in the offense. And then with Leighton, I forgot. I got you guys mixed up. Contract year, and then with what Nate said with the positional advantage, which I feel like quarterback and tight end, like if that's what you're going for, those are two perfect examples of, you know, even with tight end right now, you don't necessarily have to invest a first or second round pick, because really Kelce is the only guy going there consistently. So you're even talking about a third or a fourth round pick to get a huge positional advantage at either one of those spots. So,
I would say also, I mean, it was a group of players last year, but Jake Neff going double wide receiver early. Who did he get? He had Jamar and Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a wide receiver positional advantage. Every week you're going to have more wide receivers. And it worked out that both those guys were top 5 last year.
Yep.
So it worked out great for him, but yeah.
Also, I forgot to mention TJ Hockenson is in a contract here. Just saying.
I'm eating that up. I love it. Okay. Moving on to my second strategy. It's the inverse of my first piece of advice, which is draft what you don't know late. What I mean by that is once you're out of your starting lineup, there are almost always a ton of rookies down in that ADP range where we don't know what they are. We think that they have high ceilings, but they probably also have really low floors. So that's why they're going at the ADP that they're currently going for. So here you're looking at the Kendry Miller guys. You're looking at the Devin Achane guys. You're looking at
Achane.
Thank you. I So what's funny about that is I feel like nobody knows how to say his name, and I knew that you would. And so I almost didn't even want to name him because I didn't want that to happen. But Devin Achane,
I got you, buddy.
Thank you. There's also Jordan Addison going in this range roughly. He's a little bit earlier. I feel like the hype around him has gotten just out of hand. But these are the guys that I'm looking at drafting who are hopefully the second or third guy on my bench. I really don't want him to be any higher than that. I want him to be the first person off the bench. I'd definitely prefer a third or later. But the reality of these players is that they're not going to be on your roster at the end of the year one way or another. So does it matter? Yeah, because if you hit on one of them, it's a huge bonus for your starting lineup. But if you don't, it's not really that big of a deal, and you probably feel much more comfortable dropping them when they have lackluster performances in the first few weeks. And that's what you're looking for at the end of your bench, is you're looking for people who are expendable or they're a home run hit. So you're looking for people with opportunities. Layton's going to touch on another strategy that I really am a fan of, that definitely goes hand in hand with this one, of the teams that you're looking for when you're drafting these high ceiling guys. So I'll let Layton have his moment with that.
I'm glad you told me which one you're talking about, because I think there's a couple I can follow to this, but
there definitely are.
It's that's good, because so in terms of the real NFL draft, I'm always team trade back because I want to take as many swings as possible on players. Obviously fantasy football is a little different because you can only draft 16, but it's kind of the same way as John was talking about. You're not going to, for example, in the 11th round, you shouldn't draft, I don't know, you know, find an example. So
Jonathan
Mingo. Relax. Jonathan Mingo is a good player.
He's good, but he's not on.
Okay, example, Adam Thielen, or you could take somebody like Rashee Rice. John, which one would you take?
I really like Adam Thielen this year, so it's funny that you give that example.
Killing me. Are you serious?
Yeah, I would
take 85.
He is, but he's been the best 85-year-old besides Frank Gore in the history of the NFL.
Also, that's a little contradictory to John's point. I mean, draft what you don't know, wait, and we already know Rashee Rice is a Hall of Fame wide receiver. So.
We do. It was declared that's, first ever in Chiefs history.
That's kind of weird if you're going to do that.
Yeah, come
okay,
on, man.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Have some awareness.
Okay, basically, my second principle is that I'm going to try to do this year is draft good offenses. So I was listening to another podcast earlier today, and they were talking about how the bottom five rosters offenses in terms of pass percentage, on average, their number one wide receiver is like wide receiver 35 or something like that. So
and that's their number one, who's probably not available at this point.
Right. So last year it was like the Colts with Michael Pittman, the Bears, the Ravens. Like there wasn't anybody you're really that excited about.
Pittman was actually, he was wide receiver 20 last year. I only know that because he's on my dynasty team, but so he's a bit of an outlier. The
so
average,
the outlier.
Though,
yeah, he's
yeah
the
average
the
is
average.
35.
So Pittman's probably like the high point.
Pittman was probably the best wide receiver one of bad teams.
Yeah, but basically, so when you think about going into this year, like obviously the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, you know who's already going to be a good offense, the Eagles. So it's good to keep those teams in mind. And then when you're looking at teams like – this kind of goes against the guy I actually like, but like the Cardinals, you know, they're probably not going to be very good, but they might have a good offense still once Kyler comes back. So it's kind of interesting to think about. But definitely look at like which team is run first, because I think that's something to look into. But
the
yeah.
Falcons, sadly.
Falcons, yeah. Yeah, just draft Bijan and nobody else. But like the Falcons are very run heavy. The Titans, you know, those are two big teams to keep in mind, because, you know, if you're not saying their offenses will be bad, but if you're running a lot, you're running less plays. So just some things to keep in mind, because opportunity, never mind. No, wait, you're not talking about that, John. So opportunities matter when it comes to it, and if you're running less plays, you have less opportunity to catch the ball, run the ball, et cetera. So I always look for a high-powered offense when I can. So if I'm between two players, so I guess number one example I can think of is kind of at the turn. You have – so one that comes to mind is Davante Adams on the Raiders and Amon Ross St. Brown on the Lions. Back-to-back, like, which offense do you think is going to be better? Now, obviously, Davante Adams is a much better player with a longer history. But if that's, like, your tiebreaker, it's definitely something to keep in mind and look into more instead of just focusing on the player itself.
I think that's a good, like, second-tier hint or strategy of what you just said there at the end, Leighton, that these are factors that you want to take into consideration with the overall setup of the player. So,
yeah.
Davante Adams, another thing that I would take into consideration is that he's 30 and he's changing quarterbacks. Like, if you're debating, and that's a crazy, that's a honestly such a great comparison, is Amon-Ra St. Brown and Davante Adams. You really just made me question who I have higher in my wide receiver rankings, because it might be Amon-Ra, as crazy as it is.
I know.
Especially J-Mo is going to be out for a while. So
right, he's out for
35% target share.
6 or 8 weeks, I think.
Yeah. 6 weeks. And, like, the Lions offense was, like, top 10 last year in terms of points and yards. Their defense was awful. But
that's,
like,
wild.
Yeah, and you have to think, like, Jimmy Garoppolo is banged up right now. Who are they even starting? Like, who's that guy they got? I forget his name. Aiden O'Connell.
Who?
Aiden O'Connell is their backup.
Was he the Purdue
dude? Don't ask me where he went to. I'm lucky I know his name.
Can we get a fact check there? I think he went to Purdue.
Okay.
It's Purdue or Vanderbilt. I'm pretty sure it's Purdue.
Well, it was Purdue.
Yep.
Let's go.
Take a victory lap.
Thank you. Thank you.
But I mean, it's something to think about, because, like, Davante Adams is definitely the better player, but is he in a good situation? No.
Ew.
So just something to think about.
So I'm actually going to let you guys keep rattling through your points, because, I mean, I think you're hitting on a lot of good things. But I was going to bring up, I'm going to do a study throughout this week, and we'll present on the findings on our next episode. But I think what you guys were just talking about as far as, like, drafting players in good offenses, I would think that it's easier to predict who a top 10 offense is going to be as opposed to, like, who the top, like, players. It's easier to predict team performance, I think, as opposed to player performance. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So I'm going to look up last year and see how many of the top 30 wide receivers ranked or were on. I'm going to look at how many of the top 30 wide receivers played on top 10 offenses last year, and maybe even go back another year, because I think if we can validate that, like, argument that, you know, wide receivers on good offenses tend to do better, I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, that's completely reasonable and logical. But I mean, we also used to say that we wanted to draft wide receivers on bad offenses because they were going to be losing and having to throw the ball a lot at the end of the game. So both of those make sense in a way. But I think if you were able to look at an Amon-Ra and Davante Adams and say that the Lions are going to be a top 10 offense this year and the Raiders are going to be a bottom 10 offense this year, I think, and if it's a tiebreaker, I feel like that's a pretty good tiebreaker to break
your lead. So far,
it's looking good.
If they don't qualify as a top 10, air quote, top 10 offense, look at where their quarterback finishes in the quarterback rankings as well. And
let's look at that too.
If I just had to guess over the last 2 years, I'd say there's maybe 10 wide receivers outside of the top. What'd you say? Top 20?
30.
Okay. Maybe a little more than 10. 10 to 15 that don't qualify with either one of those criteria. But do a little deep dive. Let us know what you find out.
Yeah. How did Justin Fields do last year?
Oof. Strategy number three. This is a bold take, so strap in. Touchdowns are important.
No, hang on.
Breaking news. No. If you score, you score.
John, hashtag analysis.
Hashtag analysis. Don't expect much. So another thing that I like to do going into a draft is if there are vacated touchdowns, if there are vacated targets, if the player previously has scored a substantial amount of touchdowns, I'm trying to think of one that I felt like was elevated last year. So, for example, this one's a controversial one. Travis Kelce had 4 touchdowns in week 6 or 7 last year. I can't remember exactly what game it was.
Monday Night Football.
Yep. Travis Kelce had 4 touchdowns in one game, and I believe he finished the season with 11 touchdowns total on the year. I believe it was 11, if I remember correctly.
It was 12.
12. That's a hard one to predict of whether you think there's going to be positive regression or if he will score less touchdowns this season because he had a blow-up game. On the flip side of that, you can also say, well, there were a lot of games that he played in where he didn't score a touchdown, which I'd say that's not necessarily the first thing that I think of when I think of Travis Kelce as a touchdown scorer. But again, he's a focal part of the Chiefs offense. So it's just a number that you want to be aware of, especially when you're comparing to what players have done in previous fantasy finishes, because there's always like Jamal Williams. I think last year he had like 19 rushing touchdowns or just some crazy elevated number like that. It's just something that you want to look at. So Jamal's gone. DeAndre Swift is gone. It's a new offense. Somebody's going to have to score. There's a lot of touchdowns that are available in the Lions backfield if that's a repeat performance. I think I've got some people checking my numbers right now. I'm pretty
17
sure
rushing touchdowns.
17 years, rushing. Okay. Yeah. I was off just barely. Still, that's a ton of touchdowns. That's a ton of rushing touchdowns. Somebody has
to. You think
he's
going to do that again?
No, I'm not saying Jamal Williams is going to do that
again.
Okay,
hang on. I got to take like 30 seconds. Guess what his career high was before last year in terms of touchdowns?
4.
Nate?
That's
oh, you
correct.
Just you I'm saw, looking yeah, at it's it. 4. That's nuts. To have your career high go up by 13 touchdowns, that's insane. Sorry, go on, John.
No,
I would also say, but just on Jamal Williams, like I think he is going to have like a spectacular start to the season this year.
I agree. I think it's momentum that he can build off of. But again, we're not expecting Jamal Williams to perform anywhere to that level for a full season. But I also don't know where his ADP is right now either. Alvin Kamara's got the suspension. He's plenty capable of being that goal line touchdown back, even being a workhorse back. So
yeah.
Jamal Williams is an interesting pick for somebody who could really be a starter for the first few weeks for you in fantasy football.
In the 11th round projected right now.
I think that's worth it. I mean, if he's a top 15 running back for 3 weeks, that's 100% worth an 11th round pick.
That ADP will trend down too, I think, as we get closer to more drafts.
You're
I
probably
like
sure.
He'll be closer
especially
to the 9th round.
Leighton knows all too well with what's going on with the Kendre Miller injury situation. So I'll pass the rock off to you. I feel like I've hammered home my point. Look for guys who are going to score more touchdowns, going to score less touchdowns, or have new touchdown opportunity due to vacated scores.
Okay, so this is one. This is going to be brief. This is one I'm going into every draft with. Actually, this is kind of a 2-for-1. Okay, a 2-for-1.
Twofer, as they say.
Twofer. So the first part of it is, keep it simple, stupid. We, us three in particular, and a lot of people we know, is we research so much and we listen and read all about this stuff and we keep up with it very well that we sometimes overanalyze situations and players, right? Nate and I were actually talking about this last night as well. And, you know, for example, you know, there's players we're not as high on this year, but we don't think about why we could be wrong necessarily. We just, oh, we don't like them. Like, oh, who the heck would draft Breece Hall at 31? There's no way that would work out. And then you have to like think about it from the opposite side. So there's a reason he's at 31, for example. So I just like to say, keep it simple, stupid, because I know I will overthink it going into almost every draft. So that's the first point. And the second point is diversify your fantasy leagues. This was a big problem I had last year. It sounds silly because it's a game, but it reminds me of like the stock market, not to get all nerdy, is nobody, okay, I shouldn't say nobody. Most people don't just put all their money into Tesla stock for investing, right? They put some in Tesla, some in Apple, some in Google or whatever. And it, you know, spreads out the risks.
Hashtag not financial advice.
No, that's not.
Tech, baby.
Hashtag big tech. But what I ended up doing last year is I really liked a lot of, you know, I was really high on a few players. I drafted them in most of my leagues. And when it doesn't work out, you basically have lost multiple leads just by one opinion and thought, I guess. So just keep it simple, stupid, and diversify your leagues. So that way, you know, you won't be SOL if one of them doesn't go right, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, it's like, we thought about it last year too, and I noticed the same thing. Like, a lot of my rosters looked very similar across the 10 leagues that I'm in. But it's like, if you can be so sure that a player that you draft is going to be like spectacular, then I think you should get him. But it's close to impossible to predict that a player that you draft is going to, you know, be top at his position or be top five at his position. I mean, some players it's less risky than others. Like, I'm drafting Justin Jefferson 101. I have a pretty good feeling he's going to be top three.
Breaking news. Oh, number one pick revealed. We need alarms.
But
I'm texting the group.
Yeah, I think it's probably better to just, yeah, be more diverse in your selections. I think that's where it's a little bit different in the stock market is companies can't tear an ACL and their whole season's over.
Dude, I don't know. Have you heard about Enron?
What? What about Jeff Bezos getting a divorce? What is that? Is that an Achilles?
Stock trending up.
He's more
looking for opportunities to improve.
But that'd be in the IR for a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. That was just one thought I had, just doing a little reflection upon last year. So
yeah, in a perfect world, if you knew that, you know, one player that you're going to get in the third round is going to be a home run, then you draft him in every league and enjoy that across all your rosters. But it's too hard to predict, I think. So I think diversifying is probably a smarter play.
We tell you to expect a lot more. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to – Layton brought up a couple points in my last tip that I had. So I wanted to elaborate on those a little bit. But when we were talking last night, we were discussing, I think, drafting mistakes that we had made last year. And one of the ones that I'd reflected on a little bit was going into a draft, having so many players that were just on like a no touch list for me, like under any circumstances, I was not drafting them. And looking back on it, I kind of just didn't know why. I just had these opinions on players and didn't really read into it anymore.
And I want to give an example of one this year. He is on my no fly list, Chris Godwin.
Okay.
That's somebody who I haven't drafted in any of my mocks. It feels like one of those popular no draft picks because of the changeover at quarterback. I've considered this as well this season. I have almost convinced myself that I need to just take one of those players and see what happens, because I know it's backwards, but I think you're right. I think this is a great piece of advice that you need to be weary of having people like that on a list.
Yes. I honestly, I think we should have like put a few of those players on a list, maybe not draft them so it's not as risky, but put them on a list and then revisit it at the end of the
We
season and just
should.
see if
We
our
can do that.
opinions were right or
We
wrong.
can absolutely
But
do that.
that was one of my tips. It was evaluate every single player.
Yeah, no matter
The
what.
ones you don't like, evaluate them. I did not want to touch Tyler Lockett in any league last year,
That's a great
and
piece of advice.
he was like wide receiver 12.
Would not recommend.
Yeah.
Worth
But
it.
another one for like this year was I was thinking about was like Deontay Johnson. That was one last year I wasn't touching him anywhere, and it worked in my favor because he definitely took a step back with the quarterback change from Big Ben to Kenny Pickett. But like Deontay Johnson is somebody that I am going to need to evaluate and make sure that he's going to stay where his performance was last year, and like make sure that he's not doesn't have any potential to improve on that before I don't take him, because I think a lot of people have recency bias after players have a bad season and their ADP could fall into a range where you could get a lot of value for them. But the other tip I was going to say was evaluate every player, the ones you don't like, but especially the ones you do like. So
Yeah.
take a very deep dive into players that you're super high on. If you're doing mock drafts and you're finding out that you're drafting the same guy over and over and over again, like take a step back and like look at it and be like, why am I really drafting this player? Why am I so high on him? What has changed since last season that's making this player much more desirable for me? So one of the things, like for a wide receiver, it was something that I'm going to try and start doing is seeing what their fantasy point performance was last year, kind of evaluate what their target share was in the offense, see how many touchdowns they had, go through each of those and see if there's room for improvement or regression on any of them. If it
Yeah.
seems like they were way below on touchdowns than what they should be, or than what you would expect, I mean, there could be some touchdown progression there. If they're way high on target share, like Davante Adams was like 35% target share last year, and they brought in Jacoby Myers. They've still got what's his name, Hunter Renfrow. It's like, I think you could probably expect Davante Adams' target share to drop off a little bit. That's probably a bad example because he's still just an X guy in an offense. One of the few people in the league that demands the ball and probably should get the ball every opportunity. But I think go through that with a lot of these players that you've kind of got on the barred and banned list. But then if you have a guy that you're grabbing everywhere, make sure you don't mess it up and
Yeah.
take another look in. That example last year, Courtland Sutton. I was so high on Courtland Sutton, and it was the biggest square move I've ever made. Because I looked at it like they were getting a quarterback upgrade, but didn't look deeper into it to make sure that Russell Wilson was 100% an improvement over who they had before. So that's kind of my last tidbit.
John, do you have any more?
Yeah, I'll make this one quick. I definitely touched on it a little bit in my third piece of advice. Nate, I'm going to segue off of a guy that you talked about. It's actually Deontay Johnson. This piece of advice is look for opportunities to improve off of last season. I think Deontay Johnson is a perfect, perfect example of this. Over the last 3 years, Deontay Johnson has received 144, 169, and then 147
Nice.
targets. Nice. His yard per target in 2021 was 6.9 yards. That's great stats there. So the reason that I want to highlight Deontay Johnson is not only for his targets, but for his lack of touchdowns last season. And the fact that he only had 86 receptions. I think that we can all agree Kenny Pickett is only getting better from his rookie season. Deontay Johnson had the most snaps on this offense. He had the most targets on this offense, and yet he had zero touchdowns last season. Just a heck of a stat for a guy to be able to achieve. And
that's so bad.
They're competitive as an offense. I'm not saying they're great, but
competitive.
And Deontay Johnson is ADP 81 off the board. He finished his wide receiver 30 in PPR formats last season without a touchdown. And that's only 86 receptions, I believe, was the number. So huge, huge opportunity for improvement for a guy who was already a top 30 wide receiver. So there's nothing but there. I mean, I think you're pretty much drafting Deontay Johnson at his floor where he's going right now in drafts. And
for sure.
I mean, so
we should stop talking about him.
Not that it's, I'm not saying that this is likely, but do I see a world where Deontay Johnson is wide receiver 10 on the year? Yeah. I mean, I think it's possible. I think his ceiling is in that range, given the lack of touchdowns that he had last offseason or last season. So look for opportunities to improve of what I would call an anomaly for Deontay last year.
Mm-hmm. Very good example. He was wide receiver 8 in 2021 and was grossly overdrafted in 2022. And I think the correction in ADP that we're seeing now is ridiculous.
Overreaction. Yeah, post-hype sleeper, yep. Deontay.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, considering the fact his career low for touchdowns was 5 before, and that was his rookie year. So
huge opportunity for success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's going to be a great wide receiver too behind George Pickens. Anyway, my last point, keep it brief and to the point, is know your league. If you have, you know, a huge Patriots fan or, you know, a big Tom Brady fan, I don't know anybody like that, but they would always draft Tom Brady. So, like, I knew not to draft him because he'd go too early. Or Patriots players, for example. Or if you have guys in your league, or girls, if you have players in your league that draft, like, they just fill out their starting lineup and then don't focus on bench, you know, take advantage of that. Or if you have somebody, if you can, look back at your previous drafts. See who drafts the quarterbacks early. See who drafts the tight ends early. It's good to know because, I mean, they're probably more likely to do it because we all know John's not doing it.
I'm not drafting Tyler Lockett, that's for sure. So don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, but that's just my one. Just know your league. Obviously, people are fans of everybody for different reasons. I know somebody in our league has Tyreek Hill gloves, so might be an indication you might draft him. So something to keep in mind.
Just a thought. Okay.
Nice. That, do you have any more, John? Layton?
That does it for me. I've emptied my little treasure box of secrets. So
beautiful. That should be intellectual property, and we're just sharing that for free.
Should be. We should be paid for this.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you want to go through
you got some data for us?
No, we'll do that in the next episode.
Yeah, we'll do that next episode. I wasn't even looking at that.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah. Do you guys want to run through some updates after preseason week one and kind of cover some performances that we saw? I threw a couple down here. I can run through them with you and kind of get your guys' reaction to what we saw and what that might look like for the rest of the season.
Next episode. Yeah. Let's do next episode. We'll release two this week.
There we go.
Perfect.
Let's release two. Yeah.
What that means is we're going to hop off and we're going to record another episode.
Yeah.
Losers can come back and listen again.
We'll get up bright and early tomorrow and record this again.
I'm getting up at 4 and running 5 miles and recording this podcast.
Then
I'm getting up at 3 and running 6 and then I'm going to record.
I'm sleeping. I'll see you guys on the Skype. All right.
Thanks.
That's going to do it for this episode. Tune in like 2 seconds and you can hear the next one.
Cool. Thanks, love guys. You guys.